What are your thoughts right now with impeachment headlining on front pages across the country, with your experience studying the issue? And in 2012, prosecution among friends, presidents, attorney generals, and executive branch wrongdoing. You were thinking about this 7 years ago, and we seem to be playing it out right now.
When I wrote that book, I was focused quite a bit on the nature of the position of attorney general and the degree to which our political system is heavily dependent upon that individual having some degree of independence from the President of the United States. That is something that not all presidents have subscribed to. Obviously, John F. Kennedy had his brother as an attorney general. Even Barack Obama, to some extent, Eric Holder was a basketball-playing buddy and somebody had worked on his campaign. There was a level of independence, but not like he was an objective outsider. So there are these models, and our system, and we've seen that just in the last few weeks with how the whistleblower rules work, our system depends on the attorney general to have some degree of independence. And when it isn't there, it can cause a lot of problems and almost force us into an impeachment road, which is kind of what's happening right now.
Impeachment is the constitutional remedy for looking at issues that may be inappropriate in the judgment of Congress on behalf of the president. That is a wide range statement, high crimes and misdemeanors. Misdemeanors are technically minor offenses. High crime seems to be the focus then, but that's never really been defined.
Yeah, it isn't defined because it is ultimately a political sanction. A court would never step in and say, for example, this president was removed on the basis of an impeachment that was not a high crime and misdemeanor. They might look at procedures under the Constitution, but they would never judge the substance itself. And so really the definition of high crime and misdemeanor is whatever gets 218 votes in the House of Representatives and whatever gets 67 votes in the Senate. That is a high crime and misdemeanor. And that, I think, is explicit in the Constitution. It is a political remedy. Once a president is removed, which has never happened by this process, but if a president ever was removed, then the legal system might take over. But this is a political remedy for a political system.
I think we should remind folks that only two presidents have previously been impeached, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. They were not convicted in Senate trials. Richard Nixon resigned after the impeachment articles, two of the three, were passed by the Congress. He never went to trial because the Republican leadership convinced him to resign.
They actually weren't passed by Congress. They were passed by a committee of Congress. They were going to the House of Representatives, and he resigned before. So he actually would technically be impeached if it had actually been passed by the House.
Again, misunderstandings of the way people look at this.
Sure. I think most people can. You stop them on the street. Very well-read people believe that the word impeach means remove. And, of course, you can be impeached and not removed, and those two examples are front and center in that.
This has been changing almost daily over the last couple of weeks. More recently, a group known as the National Security Action, which is more than 300 former national security officers, primarily with the Obama administration, but bipartisan in nature, expressing their concern over this. We have a rising tide of political discussion, obviously, in the Congress. More in Democrats in the House of Representatives are moving on that side. Mitch McConnell actually got a unanimous vote in the Senate to have the transcript of the discussion between President Trump and the President of Ukraine delivered to Congress, although in a sort of edited form. This seems to be building into the politically charged issue that it really is, and that the impeachment process kind of demands.
Yeah, and you know, it is interesting the degree to which the American people don't like to think about impeachment on a regular basis. We like to let our elections stand. And Congress, too, would be theoretically reluctant to impeach. Even the most callous and strategic, highly extreme liberal political person in, let's say, the House of Representatives on the Democratic side would consider the possibility that they might rather have a weakened President Trump running for re-election than a President Pence. And so all of these political considerations are flying around, and not everybody can see where you end up in the end. I mean, that's the interesting thing. Whoever would have thought that Bill Clinton, after being impeached, would see his popularity rise and see his party gain seats in the House of Representatives? But that's exactly what happened.
Your book in 2012 really looked at the position of the Attorney General and the impact of the Department of Justice in investigating itself in some cases and those within the executive branch. You went into great detail on when a special prosecutor needed to be appointed. We've had a special prosecutor of sorts with the Mueller investigation previously. You set down certain conditions when you think that should be present. Give us the short version of when you think that's necessary, and will there be anything further, do you think?
You need to recall that between 1978 and around 2000, 2001, we had for most of that period, with a small gap, an independent counsel law that actually allowed for the appointment of a prosecutor who was not subject to control by the Attorney General or the President of the United States. Special prosecutors like Robert Mueller under the current system are subject to the Attorney General. It's only politics, again, that serves as the check. So I looked at the politics of independent counsels and special prosecutors, and it was clear to me that sometimes it's not appropriate to go with that kind of extreme route. You're thinking about things like whether during an election season, it makes sense to have a special prosecutor or independent counsel running around. When it's not the Justice Department, can the Justice Department do a pretty good job looking into, let's say, whether the HUD secretary has violated the law? And I think my answer was yes, because to some extent, it's in the president and the Justice Department's best interest to have a thorough investigation.
And the HUD secretary being Henry Cisneros in the Bill Clinton administration.
Exactly. Very nice. And so, you know, from that perspective, what I asked for is a rational calculation of when you really do need to go outside the normal system, because the normal system works well a lot of the time. But I think the current situation we're in and the calculation of Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats, especially those moderates who had been opposing impeachment and then turned another way just last week, is that this is classically a situation where the president and the Justice Department are just too biased, have too much at stake to really allow this process to happen.
One of the other points of issue that you raised in the book was emphasizing the past rather than the present. And just within the last 48 hours, I read in one of the accounts an effort to reopen the Hillary Clinton email situation from the previous election. So once again, whatever crystal ball you were looking through at the time, you were thinking of that exact situation.
Well, prosecution is really the most political of all decisions. If you think about it, you have a certain number of resources. You can't prosecute everybody. You can't put resources into every murder investigation, every assault investigation. You have to plea bargain. You have to divide up resources. That's a political calculation there, too. And clearly, there's a calculation on the part of the White House that looking into, for example, Hillary Clinton emails or Joseph Biden's son is to their benefit politically. I don't think anybody doubts that, and I'm not even sure President Trump would disagree. The question then is, how do you do it? What process you go about? And that's what this current impeachment inquiry is kind of looking at. And they don't need to prove a quid pro quo per se. Is it simply wrong or is it simply unethical to have the president ask a foreign leader to help him out in dealing with a political opponent? I mean, it's a fundamental question.
We did not have the 24/7 social media situation that we exist in today. The disinformation, which was highlighting a technique that the Nixon administration used in the Watergate case, seems to be clouding everything even further. Politics aside, how do you see things maybe playing out the next few weeks as this whole situation might become more focused or maybe not.
I mean, it is impossible to say. I do think that the gamble the on the part of the White House is that this will fall into line with so many other quote-unquote mini-scandals and issues and problems, whether it had to do with Mueller, whether it had to do with things the president said that he shouldn't have said, and then ultimately it will all fit into the big world of white noise. And on Election Day in 2020, people will vote their pocketbook, people will vote their views on immigration and not think about this. That's the gamble. But it is a big gamble because when we think about the other impeachment inquiries, we didn't have a president of the United States with a decent chance of winning another election. Andrew Johnson really would be dead on arrival as a Republican or Democratic candidate in 1868. And of course, it happened with Richard Nixon, the Watergate. During his second term, there was no election coming up. Same with Bill Clinton. So what's so unusual about the current situation is this is playing out with a looming 2020 election. And we are in uncharted territory, Ken. To figure out how the public will react to that, that's really brand new.
The Hearst papers in Connecticut have asked for the resignation of the president, which we know is not going to happen. But the Times yesterday laid out their argument, recalling much of the history that we just discussed about the Alexander Hamilton reference in the federal papers about abuse or violation of some public trust, and now the potential impact on the 2020 election that you just talked about. The information that has been coming out, comments that have been made, most everyone would agree, let the voters make the decision. But there's going to be some sinking in of all these comments on the electorate. What risk do you think we have now of the election going haywire?
Elections themselves are a fragile thing. I think it's moments like this we look back and should appreciate just how many elections could have found themselves in some kind of peril when Abraham Lincoln running for re-election in the middle of a civil war with members of the army voting. I mean, these are things that happen that we take for granted because we got through them. This is again, uncharted territory, the extent to which what if President Trump refused to leave the White House, even if he lost? What if there's the same kind of confusion that happened in 2000 about who won? We think that regardless, you wouldn't expect that the president, the tie doesn't go to the runner. You wouldn't expect the president just gets to stay because he's there anyway. And yet, who would remove him? These are really mysteries. They put a lot of constitutional scholars, keep them up at night, writing wonderfully interesting columns and projections. But we've got to see it before we even know. Ultimately, it's going to be the act of selfless people, people willing to sacrifice their own political standing to kind of step up and figure out a way out of it. That's the way it's happened in the past. Who knows what will happen in 2020?
But so far, we have not seen any candidates for the Kennedy Profiles and Courage Award yet.
It might be that somebody within the White House is going to fit a profile of courage. It might be somebody on the Democratic House side saying, you know what, this is best left to the voters and shouldn't be an issue of impeachment. It's impossible to say. Those profiles of courage come from very unlikely places.
Well, thank you, Professor Yaloff, for stopping by. I know we're going to be talking again as things move down in the future because it's always interesting to hear your opinions and your thoughts on these things.
As always, I look forward to it, Ken.